So now we have a seminar by Johanna Erdmenger on Berryphase, factorization and wormholes in ADS CFT. This is a subject that was a recent preprint, and I think is extremely interesting in the way that it shows that factorization in ADS CFT is a non-trivial question. And Johanna has clarified many aspects of that. So. It's nice to have you here. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much. Also, thanks, Mark, for the invitation. And I'm extremely happy to be here. Actually, what I'm going to talk about will be relying quite a lot on the lecture that you just had, and so I can make lots of comments. And I'm glad that Mark didn't wipe off the board, then I can actually show things. And so it's really very nice to be here. And if you don't know where Würzburg is, so this is a small town in the north of Bavaria. It's actually closer to Frankfurt than to Munich. And it's actually nice. There's a river, there's a wine, and there's a castle. So all the things that you would like for a university town. So if you would like to visit at some point, you're most welcome to. Okay, so, exactly, so the talk is about Berryphases, factorization, and wormholes in ADS-CFT. And so as you will see, there's a lot of relations to the lecture of Professor Marc Hinault that we just heard. Okay, so I think I have an hour and a half, so the plan is to go really slowly. And so please ask me questions during the talk. Okay, so it's more meant to be really pedagogical, and I will go slowly. Okay, Berryphases for wormholes. Well, what's the motivation? So this is really one of the recent developments in ADS-CFT that provides an very nice relation between entanglement on the one hand side and geometry on the other. And this is precisely mostly due to wormholes, and in addition to having black holes, and I will explain a little bit what we mean by wormholes in this context. And so ADS-CFT, as you hopefully all know, provides this very nice relation between quantum field theory on one hand side and gravity on the other. And in this context, it's actually this relation between quantum mechanics or quantum field theory on the one hand side and gravity on the other is made extremely clear and beautiful in terms of some mathematics, and in particular, this relation between entanglement and geometry. So I should say that this development that I'm going to present today started in about, there's some recent papers by Malassino as early as 2001, 2003. But then there's some nice work by Mark van Raamsdonk from about 2010, and then this famous paper by Malassina and Susskind on ERs, EPR, which I'm also going to mention. More recently, there's some developments in quantum mechanics, which is due to Hermann Verlinde from 2020, 2021. So the concept of the wormhole, and in this way, as I'm going to define it in this talk, is also present in very simple quantum mechanical systems, and I will show some examples there. So, and the Berryphase, which is a kind of topological concept, provides an understanding of how degrees of freedom entangle to give the full Hilbert space. And this sentence applies both to the quantum mechanics, but also to the wormhole and the gravity, so which makes it extremely beautiful. And this allows us to address this problem of factorization, which is a very topical question in, say, the last 5 years of research in ADS-CFT. And I will explain exactly what is meant by this. So what I said here above is for quantum mechanics. But so to say, the first part of the talk will be about quantum mechanical systems, so ADS-2, CFT-1, if you want. And then the second part will be about ADS-3, CFT-2, and that's where lots of relations to the work of Marc Hinault will actually appear, because we can then define the Berryphases actually for the conformal symmetry, for the Virasoro group, and then very naturally we can make use of all of this that was explained in the last hour and a half. Okay, so this is the overview of my talk. So I'm first going to explain what exactly is meant by wormholes and factorization in ADS-CFT. Then I'm going to discuss the Berry phase in quantum mechanical systems, and then I'll move on to two-dimensional conformal field theories and their gravity dual and wormholes and Berry phases in that context. Okay, so that's the plan. Okay, so and basically the talk will be on two papers. This is, I think, the one that Marc mentioned about the Berry phase in AD3 CFT2, which appeared in February. And so there's two of my PhD students, Moritz Dormand and Anna-Lena Weigel, involved, and my colleague René Meyer, and postdoc Shubhik Banerjee. And so this will be the second part of the talk. And the first part of the talk about quantum mechanics, this is actually quite nice because it was done in collaboration with some people working in material science. So it's a really interdisciplinary project between gravity and material science. And there's Flavio Nogueira and Jeroen van den Brink, they are both in Dresden, and then people from our group. And so the idea for this project came because we are all funded by the so-called excellence cluster, which is something new and peculiar in German science funding, which is money from the federal government, which, okay, in France this may sound totally trivial, but in Germany it's quite rare that the federal government gives money for science. And so we managed to get this really big project there, of which we are part, and it's mostly a project in condensed matter physics, but our ADS-CFT group is also part of this collaboration. And so we were incented to do some work with people in the real world and material scientists. And so that actually originally led to this idea in last fall. But then once we had this, or last autumn, once we had this, then we said, okay, let's do it in one dimension higher. And then we get all these very beautiful connections to actually asymptotic symmetries in ADS3. So I would like to tell you the story, and I think it's maybe interesting to note, just on a sociological point of view, that in a seminar where we talk about asymptotic symmetries in ADS3 and quantum gravity and so on, I will actually mention some experimental results. Okay, but these are in one dimension DOA, I should say. Okay, but I think this is actually quite cute. Okay, so let me start by explaining what I mean by black holes and wormholes in ADS-CFT and the factorization puzzle. Okay, as I said, I'm only going to go slowly, and please ask me questions, because this also gives me some feedback, then I know if I'm too slow or too fast. And okay, well, the starting point of everything is, of course, the ADS-CFT correspondence, which is now 25 years old, almost. In November, it will be 25 years old. So, which states that gravity in ADS-D plus 1 can be mapped to strongly coupled CFTs at its boundary. So, this is the usual coordinate system that we will use for if we look at ADS-3. So, with the radial coordinate, time, and an angular coordinate, and there's a constant time. So, if you could cut at constant times, then you get this hyperbolic projection. So these angels and devils of Escher mean that the areas at the center and at the boundary, so all of these have the same area, but at the boundary they look much closer, which shows this negative curvature. Okay, and then also equally important for this talk is going to be to consider black holes inside the empty de Sitter space. And so as already also proposed some time ago, this is dual to a field theory at finite temperature. So we have a black hole inside the anti de Sitter space. And then by going to Euclidean geometry, the metric for this is given as this. And so this is some Schwarzschild type of coordinates. So first of all, we see, okay, so this angle is compactified, but for regularity at the horizon, we then also need the Euclidean time coordinate to be compactified, which introduces a notion of temperature. And we also see, so this is the Schwarzschild type of metric, that this metric is really only appropriate if we are outside the black hole. So if we cross into the black hole, other coordinate systems are more appropriate. Okay, I suppose everybody knows this in this room. And, okay, good. So, then, as I said, if we want to see what happens if we cross the horizon, it's better to go to some other coordinates, which are the so-called Kruskal coordinates. And so Most of the talk I'm going to be concerned with this particular geometry, which corresponds to an eternal black hole in global ADS3. This means that we have two boundaries. Okay, so this is why Marc mentioned at the end of his talk that what happens for multiple boundaries. So this is what I'm really going to be concerned with in this talk. So what happens if we have two boundaries, so a right and a left boundary, then first of all, in these coordinate systems, time goes up on this side and it goes down on that side. And we can imagine one copy of the CFT to be defined on this side and the other copy of the CFT to be defined on that side. And so what is going to be super important and is going to have many, many effects for all the Berry phases, symplectic forms, and all the things I'm going to talk about, that at the horizon, the time-like killing vector switches sign. And that leads to a type of singularity that will have many, many non-trivial effects in everything I'm going to say. So, okay, you may think, okay, I have seen this before, but let me stress this because this will be very, very important for everything I'm going to work. I should also say that, this geometry is really corresponds to a non-traversable wormhole. This means that observers from here can travel into the wormhole and observers from there can travel into the wormhole and they can meet there, but it's impossible to go in on one side and come out on the other side. Okay, so, and this, maybe you know that for traversable wormholes, one needs at least for a short amount of time a violation of energy conservation, but this is not what we're going to consider. So we consider this non-traversable wormhole. Okay, so let me point you to this very nice proposal by Malacena from already 2001 about this eternal ADS black hole. So he suggested that an eternal black hole in ADS spacetime is dual to two copies of the boundary CFT on the left and right hand side entangled in a so-called thermofield double state. Okay, so I have a CFT here and its exact copy also on the other side. And then according to this proposal, since there's this ADS black hole in the middle, these two theories will be entangled and they will be entangled in the so-called thermofield double. So what is this? This is the purification of a thermal state of one of the CFTs. Okay, so assume for a CFT you have a Hilbert space which is defined by these vectors n, and then we can just combine them with a copy of the spaces on the other side with the thermal weights here. And so this is the thermal field double state, and then this is designed in such a way that if we take a trace over one of the degrees of freedom, say the ones over the on the right-hand side, then we recover precisely the thermal density matrix for the other side. So that's the definition of this thermal field double. And so it's a pure entangled state. Okay, so that very naturally leads us to this EPR proposal, which you may find in these papers. So as I said, this is a relation between entanglement and geometry, where EPR stands for Einstein-Podolsky-Rosen entanglement, in the sense of, you know, two photons that are created at some place and then travel in opposite directions, but their spin direction is still correlated due to the entanglement. And on the other hand, the Einstein-Rosen bridge, which is actually a wormhole. And so this ERS EPR proposal precisely states that two entangled CFT with this EPR correlation are connected through a wormhole. So here in this case, this non-traversable wormhole. They are in this thermal field double state that I just defined. So this blue line is just a constant time slice, and the red one is a symmetry transformed one, and these symmetry transformations, they will later play an important role for defining the Berry phases and also they will correspond to precisely those types of transformation that Marc introduced in his lecture in the last 1.5 hours. So that there you can already see a relation. So we can now also ask what happens to the asymptotic symmetries, and what happens if we write Berry phases for these asymptotic symmetries. So that's the goal of where I'm heading. Okay, so and that directly leads to this factorization puzzle. So in principle, these two CFTs, they don't interact with each other. These are just copies of each other. So and this means that in principle, they have disjoint Hilbert spaces. So the Hilbert space, the total Hilbert space is such a product structure. And but on the other hand, this ADS space, so if we assume that in quantum gravity this is also associated with a Hilbert space, then this obviously does not factorize because it's just one thing. And so there's an apparent contradiction between the fact that here we have a non-factorized structure, whereas in principle at the CFTs we have a factorized structure. And the upshot of my talk is going to be that we can formulate this puzzle in a very nice way, which then also, I think, hints to how to solving it. Namely, there will be geometrical structures that actually show you how these Hilbert spaces can be related in the CFT, and that very closely relates also to Marc Enyo's work, which he's going to present next week, I think, with Wout Mervis and Rentsch. And so, in fact, there will be some non-trivial holonomies associated with this geometry. And for our case now, it's interesting that these non-trivial holonomies will be leading to Berry phases. And also to symplectic forms. And these symplectic forms, they will be non-exact. And the fact they're non-exact is precisely related to this killing structure at the horizon. Well, okay, so my answer would be that the first step for this is to actually look at the Berry phase. Okay, so in some sense, my talk is going to be about this statement. Okay, I totally agree with you. We don't know what the Hilbert space of a wormhole is. Okay, there's some semi-classical approximations. So, okay, it's an excellent question. I hope I will come back to it. Yes, but this thing in the middle, obviously, is not. All right, excellent. No, this is precisely what I want to address. So we will write the Berry phases for this geometry in a kind of semi-classical approximation. I totally agree. But then discuss some relation to what happens with the boundary theories. And hopefully, at the end, we can come back to the question and say, what have we learned using this approach? Okay, so the answer to your question is, yes, I know it's not exact, but hopefully what I'm going to talk about today will help us to make some statements. Okay, so that's the plan. Okay, and so here's the first ingredient, which relates to this very nice work by Hermann Verlinde from last year, and which for us also was kind of the start point. And so So first I want to look at wormholes in quantum mechanics, so which are in 0 + 1 dimensions, and then afterwards we will go to 1 + 1 dimensions. Okay. These are kind of very abstract wormholes, okay, so and the starting point is to look at the partition function for some Hamiltonian in some quantum mechanical system with beta the inverse temperature. Now I will point to this blackboard quite a lot, and I'm very glad that Marc didn't rub it off, because so he clearly emphasized this relation to the phase space, okay, of this entire construction in ADS3, and so there's these killing charges and so on. And so this is actually also behind everything I'm going to talk about in this next part of the talk. Because, okay, so we have a Hamiltonian, which is a system, okay, classically it's a system in classical mechanics, and in classical mechanics we have some generalized coordinates and momenta, and then we can define a symplectic form. Okay, so the symplectic form is defined really for at the level of classical mechanics already. Yeah. Okay, so then if we quantize this Hamiltonian with these generalized coordinates and momenta, then we get a partition function. And now in all generality, the partition function is going to look like this. So there will be one integral over this symplectic form in phase space integrated over the disk. So this is the integration region for this integral here. And then we have a boundary term, and the boundary term is just, so this circle here, the boundary is the thermal circle. And at the boundary, we just integrate over the Hamiltonian of this system. Okay, and then now this is also a very crucial statement for everything I'm going to say in my talk. So if you have an exact symplectic structure, which means that the symplectic structure can be written as an exterior derivative of some other form, then I can use Stokes' theorem and convert the integral over the symplectic form to an integral at the boundary. And then obviously my path integral just collapses to something which involves an integral just over the boundary. Okay, and if that happens, this is a factorization. Okay, because here you can see what happens if the symplectic structure is non-exact, then assume you look at a correlation function of this type. And then if the symplectic structure is non-exact, then your integration region, I mean, this is if n is equal to 4, for instance, you can do this for arbitrary n, then you get something which is obviously not factorized. Okay, so this is maybe some answer to your question about what exactly do I mean with the Hilbert space. Okay. So in this case, we have this non-factored integration region, and although it's quantum mechanical origin, this looks like a multi-mouse wormhole. Okay, so it's a very simple wormhole, but clearly this is an object which looks like a wormhole. And so here already at this very basic level, so I mean this argument is due to Hermann von Linde, but you already see that that there's a relation between quantum mechanics and geometry in using this non-exact symplectic form. Okay, and so I will make a lot of use of this in this talk. Okay, so let's apply this to quantum mechanics. And okay, so let me motivate a little further here why I'm doing this. So what we're going to do is to consider the verifiers for an interacting two-qubit system in quantum mechanics. So that's something extremely simple. So your Hilbert space is made out of two spins, and they're spin a half, so they can point up or down. And so what we are going to see is that states with the same entanglement may have a different verifier. And again, mathematically, this will be described by a non-exact symplectic form. And so that will indicate a non-factorization just as for this integration region that I just showed on the previous slide. And so this is a this non-factorization provides a mathematical structure that is shared by the wormholes. Okay, so that's so our approach to the non-factorization in this very simple context. And so the fun part is that, I mean, this is really of interest to experimentalists, and you know, they can consider these quantum mechanical systems and possibly realize these verifiers experimentally. So at least in the paper we wrote with the condensed matter theorists, we made some proposals about how to actually measure this. Okay, and then in the second part of the talk, I'm going to do exactly the same, but for 83 CFT2. Good. So I thought it's probably good to briefly define verifiers at a quantum mechanical level. And so I refer you to these lectures of David Tong, which you can find online and which are extremely useful about the quantum Hall effect. Sorry. And so the starting point is the time-dependent Schrödinger equation that you see at the top. Okay, so this is our Schrödinger equation. And then now we consider a ground state that is obtained by some unitary operator acting on the basis state. And so here we allow the state to depend on some parameters, which then depend on time. And then the Berry connection, so it's a connection in the usual mathematical sense, is defined like this. So if you have several of these parameters, you can label them by an index I. And then so we see how this change in these parameters changes the state. And so then for the Berry phase, we take this form for our state and then insert it into the Schrödinger equation, which then gives us this equation here. And so from this equation, then you get the phase that is defined in this particular way. Okay, so if you just look at one spin in a magnetic field, so later I'm going to look at, so the interest will be, as later also in the ADS3 case, to look at two spins which interact with each other and then are in this magnetic field. But at a simple level, just by looking at one Berry phase, one spin, and then the Berry phase occurs from this circle here. And so this plot is now a plot in the space spanned by the components of the magnetic field. So it's not in real space. So there's a kind of transition to a kind of abstract space. And here already we see that there's a singular point at the origin. And again, the singular point leads to this non-exact symplectic form, which then leads to a non-trivial result here for this path integral, or this this integral along this, so I should say this contour integral. Okay, so but note that this is not in real space, but in this space spanned by the magnetic field. Okay, so and now we can use this concept and look to characterize non-factorization in quantum mechanical models. And so we start with this very, very simple Hamiltonian for a two-coupled spin in an external magnetic field. So we have two spin operators, S1 and S2, with a coupling J, and then the whole thing is in a magnetic field. But so we consider the electronic Zeeman interaction in a hydrogen atom, so it means only the electron. So it's like spin one and spin two correspond to a proton and an electron in a hydrogen atom. And then, but only one of them, the electron one, is allowed to interact with the magnetic field. Okay, so objects printed in bold are vectors, and these are just scalars. So here we simplify to the magnetic field and the spin component to be parallel. But now there are many symmetries, and we can generalize the second term also to a general vector product, scalar product, and then consider unitary transformations that return us to the original Zeeman term. And now because of the SU2 structure that we have here, and there's actually two patches. Okay, so we can consider one transformation, U1 means that it's a transformation acting on the spin one, which interacts with the magnetic field. And then, we have a transformation with parameters phi, theta, and this psi, and this psi can be matched in two ways, depending whether you look at the north or the south pole. I think my battery is going flat here, which is a bit bad. Okay, and since the second spin, I don't have any spare batteries. I think this is not going to work anymore. Let's see. Since the second spin does not interact with the magnetic field, we can choose any unitary transformation just acting on the second spin. And we make a choice and just say, let's transform it with the same theta and phi as the other one, except that we allow for a parameter lambda here, which goes between 0 and 1. And then we apply a total transformation U, which is the tensor product of these two. Okay. And you see this lambda is an extra parameter, and it's a bit unfortunate, I shouldn't have called this lambda. So this lambda is really the parameter which tells you where your path is. But this in this notation will be the theta and phi. Okay, so and lambda is yet another parameter which parameterizes your Berry phases. Okay, sorry about this. Okay, and so first let's we want to make a relation between the Berry phase and the entanglement entropy. So we consider the ground state. So and this we can write in this standard quantum mechanical notation with angular momentum and the magnetic quantum number. And so there are singlet and triplet states. And so our ground state of this model has a contribution from this triplet component and from the singlet. And there's an angle, yet another parameter called alpha, which is just the ratio of the magneton, the magnitude of the magnetic field, and the size of the coupling between the two spins. So that's just another constant. So this alpha will always be a constant. It just parameterizes the magnetic field if you want. Okay. So now the entanglement entropy does not change when applying the unitary transformation that each act on each spin individually. So so if we calculate the entanglement entropy but for the reduced density matrix where we trace over one of the spins, then it's invariant under this transformation. Okay, you think that might be trivial because of the cyclicity of the trace, but it's not quite trivial because the trace is only over one of the spins, so there's a little more work to do. Okay, and okay, so you can calculate this and this is the result, and it's independent of this parameter lambda. Okay, so whatever transformation you do, which because it's a symmetry, the entanglement entropy does not change. But now, if we look at the Berry phase, this will in fact change and depend on this lambda. And then we will have a very interesting situation in which states with different Berry phase will nevertheless have the same entanglement entropy. Okay, so okay, now this is important because this will also come back later when I talk about 83. So the starting point in a more mathematical terms for calculating this Berry phase is the so-called Maurer-Cartan form. And so this is a connection on a group manifold M, which is defined for any group element sigma in this way. And so the Berry connection is then the ground state expectation value of this Maurer-Cartan form. Okay, so for the Maurer-Cartan form, we take precisely our transformation U that we had before, and we sundered it between in our ground state that we calculated for our Hamiltonian. And then we get some result, which depends on this alpha, which parameterizes the magnetic field, lambda, which is a free parameter between 0 and 1, and theta and phi are the coordinates on the SU2 manifold of our spin. Okay, and then we can also calculate the Berry curvature, and for this we take the exterior derivative of this Maurer-Cartan form, which leads us to the so-called Kirillov-Kostad symplectic form. Okay, so this is defined for the Maurer-Cartan. And from this we can calculate the Berry phase, and so we see this Berry phase depends on this parameter. Okay, so if we rotate them slightly differently, this will be probed by the Berry phase, although the entanglement of the two photons or spins or spin and a half particles, electron and proton, will remain the same. Okay, so the Berry phase is non-trivial as long as these two transformations are different and acting on the two spins. And the reason, okay, this is again something that will show up later for the ADS3, since this Kirillov constant form is not globally exact. Okay, in fact, it's proportional to the volume form of S2. And so since we have this non-exact symplectic form, we get this non-zero Berry phase. Okay, and that will be a recurrent theme that we will also see in the other examples later on. Now, for the quantum mechanical system, this means that we have two states that have the same entanglement entropy but different Berry phase. And that could, of course, be interesting for people interested in actually building quantum computers, okay, because it would be a way of testing entanglement of states. Okay, but okay, let me just say that we can formulate the whole thing in a much more mathematical way. And the geometry of this two-qubit Hilbert space is SU4. But now if we switch on this magnetic field, then SU4 reduces to the complex projective space CP3, which is SU4 modded out by U3. So that's the symmetry of the Hamiltonian, including the Zeeman term. And now, if we have two non-interacting factorized qubits, then each of them has a space CP1. Hilbert space CP1. So if they're not entangled, essentially, then we have this factorized subspace inside CP3. And that can be very nicely seen using the symplectic way of using, so sigma is the Pauli matrix. So this is symplectic coordinates for the spin operator. Yes, so the Zeeman term means if I switch, okay. So if I just have two qubits, then I have SU4, but if I put a magnetic field, I break some of the symmetries, and it's precisely this. Yeah, but the total Hilbert space is still SU4. I mean, if I have two spins, that can freely show up and down. Yeah. Okay, all right, I agree. So I should probably say, okay, maybe forget the first line, but so just say that the symmetry of our problem is this symmetry, CP3. If we
symmetry
have...
is not the symmetry, that's also where they want the system.
Okay, let me go further, okay. Let me go to the next slide, then we will discuss. Okay, I will come then in a minute. So, I mean, I want to say, okay, whatever your space is, I think it's CP3, but, okay, let me, whatever the symmetries are, okay, so if I have two spins that don't interact, I have CP1 and CP1. And so it's factorized, okay, it doesn't matter what it actually is, but it's factorized, okay. And so, in fact, if the magnetic field is zero, the ground state lies in this space and describes the local one-sided properties. And then if you switch on this magnetic field, then the tensor structure is broken, and then the ground state is, in fact, non-diagonally embedded in some manifold of CP3. Okay, maybe to come back to your question. Yes, but the point is, well, okay, that's just the point. Because there will be this bundle structure, okay? And so this encodes precisely this non-factorization. So this is actually what I want to highlight. I think I probably mean what you're saying in a less mathematical way, okay? So so in this U1 inside the G3 defines a bundle, and its generator acts non-block diagonally. So, and then this exactly means that I have a non-factorization. So if I start with a 4x4 complex unitary matrix that I get from this construction, and then precisely look at the Hamiltonian which I have with J and B, which break the symmetries, then I get a Hilbert space for the ground state, which is no longer factorized. Okay, so that's the statement I want to make. Okay, we can look at, maybe we should look at the paper again where I do the calculation, but okay, so the upshot is there's no factored subspace for this interacting model when the magnetic field is turned on.
There is no
factored subspace for the ground. The ground state is not, does not factorize into a product. Okay, so, but maybe this is precisely what you were asking. Okay, so my talk is about non-factorization. Okay, so, and the statement I want to make that already in this simple case, yeah, I should have written more equations and it would be better to follow. Already in the simple model, we see an occurrence of this non-factorization, because precisely this ground state psi naught that I was calculating is not an element of a product space. Yeah, exactly. So that's what I wanted to say. Okay, so. And I know this is a super simple model, but I want to use this as a kind of toy model when I start talking about black holes later. Okay. So, and the statement is that exactly the same structure we will also see for the black holes or for the wormholes. And so the statement is that this fact that we get this non-factorization is related to the fact that we have a non-exact symplectic form for the geometry. So this this form here will be non-exact, and that's at the heart of getting a non-trivial Berry curvature, but it's also at the heart of having a non-factored structure. Okay, I agree that, yes, okay, so because if we didn't have any interaction, then we wouldn't see anything. You're totally right. But, okay, let's maybe move on and then we will come, I mean, yeah, I agree with you. Okay, so I was, in the view of this factorization puzzle is the statement was that the two theories are not interacting, and now they are, and then of course we see a non-trivial Berry phase. But in the other example, which I'm heading to next, we can actually switch off and on. I mean, there will be a particular holonomy associated to this whole geometry, and we, by particular gauge transformations, we can switch it on and off. So that's exactly precisely the point. Yes, if you want, my example is a bit misleading, but okay. The statement was that if I have two interacting spins, I see a very similar non-factorization as in the geometry. Okay, yeah. Good. Before I come to that, let me maybe make this slightly more general remark that, I mean, as I said, this could potentially... So the statement here, okay, what we looked at here was also motivated by real-world physics, not necessarily by non-factorization. So so the statement I was making is that states that have the same entanglement entropy may nevertheless have a different Berry phase with respect to this magnetic field. And so that actually led us to conjecture some experiments that might be done to see such structures. And so there's some experimental technique which is called quantum tomography. And so this is a nice review, of kind of textbook review on this. So a quantum state is reconstructed using measurements on an ensemble of identical quantum states. So then one can actually measure the density matrix. And so, for instance, what is done is that people measure products of tensor products of Pauli matrices, and that allows to reconstruct the phase between the two states, so the triplet and singlet state that make up the ground state, for instance. And so then what we suggested is that one should perform a simultaneous measurement of the Berry phase and entanglement, and that would involve an interference between original and rotated states for an ensemble of identical quantum states. Okay, let me not go into any details. So these are some... So I was previously talking about the hydrogen atom in the magnetic field, but there's lots of other stories like optical cavities, NMR, superconducting quantum circuits, and quantum simulators, where this general fact could be useful. And I mean, it's interesting because although it's a very simple example, it was motivated by these gravity considerations. And so I think that's nice. I would also in particular like to recommend this review here by Bhattacharya, Yoshi, and Sundar, which is also lots of ADS-CFT and nevertheless really talks about quantum simulators and makes a nice connection between quantum information and ADS-CFT. All right. Okay, so this was my toy model example to give a bit of flavor to what we mean by a wormhole. And now let's go to ADS3 CFT2. So, and this will be very much related to the asymptotic symmetries in ADS3. Okay, so let me just define a few. In the notation a little bit. So we have the Virasoro group, which we know by the diffeomorphisms of S1 with a hat. And this hat means that we look at diffeomorphisms in a real number, which then reflects the central charge, of course. And so as Mark just derived, we can write the energy momentum tensor in terms of the Virasoro generators. And so then we have highest weight state called H, and then of course we have this entire group theory formalism and representations and so on, where these Ln act as the ladder operators. Okay, so now the CFT vacuum is invariant under global conformal transformations. So it's invariant under L minus 1, L0, and L1, and has an SL2R symmetry. And so now if you have a general highest weight state with H bigger than 0, then this is invariant under L naught, so essentially there's a U1 symmetry. Okay, and the symmetry is called the stabilizer group in what follows. So essentially we pick one state, say the vacuum or this highest weight state. And then if we perform, in this case, SL2R transformation, in this case, U1 transformations, then the state will be invariant under those. Okay. And then if we combine the left and right moving sector, then the vacuum state will have this symmetry, and the highest weight state will have that symmetry. And so again, here you see already a factored structure, but we have to be a little careful because we still have to talk about the two boundaries. Okay, so now some notation which was also introduced by Mach in his lecture. So if in three dimensions, the bulk spacetime is completely fixed by the boundary. Okay, Okay, so this is invariant on the SL2R, that's why I quotient with the SL2R. And this is invariant on the U1. These are the orbits. Okay, because I'm going to talk about orbits in a second. Sorry, I was going a bit fast. Yeah, I will come there in a second. Okay. So, the key statement is that if we are in three dimensions, the bulk spacetime is completely fixed by the boundary metric and the expectation value of the energy momentum tensor in a particular state. And so here we write this Pfeffermann-Gram expansion that also was mentioned by Mach, and which in ADS-CFT is present in the context of holographic renormalization, as in this paper. Okay, normally in Pfeffermann-Gram expansion there's a series here, but this terminates in two dimensions and in ADS-3, so that's the structure that we have. And then, in fact, you can calculate this, these coefficients, and they look like this. Okay. And the symmetry is this state is invariant under I don't know why I put a slash. I mean, this is in. So if we have vacuum state, this is invariant under SL2R, and if this higher weight state is invariant under U1, and this becomes actually a killing symmetry of the bulk, which makes a connection to this ADS3. So now in this talk, I will only consider essentially vacuum CFTs. This means I will look at the energy momentum tensor in the dual metric, but I'm not going to look at any matter fields in the bulk. So, and for the CFT in vacuum, this gives us the central charge. And so this symmetry will be then dual to the empty ADS SL2R killing symmetry. Okay, so what I was mentioning before were the co-adjoint orbits, and they will play a very important role in the subsequent, and in fact, the Berry phases will be defined for the co-adjoint orbits. So, I'm sure most of people are familiar, but let me just go through this. So a Virasoro group element G acts, also here I say a gate in the sense that I'm talking about conformal transformation as a gate in a kind of quantum information approach to conformal field theory. And it will act in the following way if I define a particular, so this should be such some conformal transformation. And then we have the adjoint acting in this way here. And then on a state V, it will act by the co-adjoint transformation, which is given here. And so what is a co-adjoint orbit is the sets of states V reachable through co-adjoint transformations on a fixed state V naught. Okay. So we start with, we fix some state V naught, and then we could look at the set of states that is reachable via this transformation. And if we do this for the Virasoro group, then the co-adjoint orbit is just the Verma module. Now, these co-adjoint orbits, they naturally come with a symplectic form written here, where now this theta of G is this object here. And that leads naturally to an action, which is the so-called geometric action, which is just the integral over this, over this form and it looks like this. Okay, and so if we calculate the co-adjoint orbit for the Virasoro group, then okay, we pick some B naught, and so it's for these transformation Fs of the diffeomorphisms. And actually, in fact, if we just calculate this, this is what we get. So where this abrupt is a Schwarzschild derivative. Okay. Okay. So and I'm going to very much use this paper by Oblak. I wonder, is he in the room, by the way? Because he's in Paris. He was busy. Okay. Say hello from me. Okay. I would love to meet him, because I'm really very much using his paper here. Okay. Okay, so and so he defined the very phase for the Virasoro group. Okay, so and this is what we're going to make heavy use later for our wormholes. So this Virasoro very phase is generated by diffeomorphisms that change the CFT states, so improper diffeomorphisms, and the very phase for the group manifold will be defined in such a way. So again, phi is some state that we consider, and then this is the connection, and then so if the time evolution is just generated by this time-dependent group element U, then we can write this in such a way. And then obviously there's the same story. So this is again, it's already very similar to what Mark was saying in this lecture, that of course we have to take care of the central extension. And so there will be an extra term here with the central charge, which comes from the Maurer-Cartan form, which is exactly the analog of the Maurer-Cartan form, which I discussed for the quantum mechanics case. Okay, and so now the interesting point is that we'll give rise to a very phase in the same way as for the quantum mechanical system that I was discussing before. So the Virasoro very phases, they probe the geometry of a particular co-adjoint orbit. So, and so for states outside the orbit, the stabilizer group actually leads to a phase. Okay, so that's shown in this picture. So so here for the U1 group, we consider, say, a state H, highest weight state. And then this plane here is the stabilizer of this particular state that we look at. And then there's a symmetry U1 associated to each point here. And now if we, if we go outside this plane, this means we apply this improper diffeomorphisms here. And so now this, if we have a closed loop inside this stabilator group, then if we go outside by such an improper diffeomorphism, then going around, we actually pick up a phase which comes from this U1 symmetry. And precisely that will lead to the very phase. And so that's actually, from the mathematical point of view, it's very similar to what I was discussing before, just now in this abstract group theoretical language. And it will be in one dimension higher because we look at CFTs. Okay, so but here I should still say this is for just one, okay, so I mean there's no entanglement yet, and this is just for one CFT. Okay, and now the interesting question will be, what happens if we combine this? Well, if we apply, I mean, this is like before when I, at the very beginning, I explained the Berry phase for just one particle in a magnetic field. And so that's the equivalent here. And now what happens if we go to, two entangled? But okay, before I go there, okay, so this is now extremely connected to what Mark was explaining in the lecture before. So for holographic, so in view of considering holographic CFTs, I mean this is a general statement, but just for in view, particularly relevant for holographic CFTs. So then again, let me stress that we have this structure here, and then and the dual bulk geometries associated to these Virasoro co-adjoint orbits are precisely the Banyalos geometries. And these are the onshore solutions to ADS3 gravity with Brown-Indimo boundary conditions. Okay, so which you can see here. So I'm sure this is extremely familiar to everybody. let me just say, so that's the connection or in which we consider these Barry phrases for the Virasoro group. Okay, to make clear the connection to the talk before. Okay, so now I'm going to, so now the idea is, let's use this nice formalism of the coadjoint orbits for the case when we have two boundary CFTs on each side of this global ADS black hole. And so I guess, Mark, you're going to give a talk about this paper next week. Okay, good. Let me advertise next week's seminar where Mark will present this very nice work. And so I will just pick some terms, some parts of it, and apply this formalism of the coadjoint orbit. Okay. So, and actually this picture is from this paper, and so we've taken it here. Okay, so now let's take the case where we have two CFTs, one of each side of this eternal black hole. And then obviously, as I argued before, this corresponds to a wormhole geometry. And now let's go to one side and look into one wormhole from one side. Okay, then we see such an object. Okay, so the outer circle is where the wormhole begins, and then you see this entire tube, and that's the other side where there's the other boundary of the other wormhole, the other end of the wormhole. Okay, and so as Mark briefly mentioned already, then there's obviously a non-trivial holonomy, and this, which is written here, so which corresponds to the winding number around this other end of the wormhole. Okay, so, and now Mark talked about Schoen-Simons action already quite a lot in his lecture, and so now we can make very nice use to combine it with this Barry phase argument. And in this paper, there is a very nice example of just the U1 Schoen-Simons action first. And so we can already see the structure there, and then we will go to the Virasoro case. Okay, so let's just do first the U1 example. And then, so this is the Schoen-Simons case here with the coordinates phi, t, and r of the ADS3 space. And then solving the equations of motion, one finds, okay, so this is quoting from this paper, that there's a pure gauge term, but also the holonomy contributes here to this term. And then, as always, when there's a Schoen-Simons action, we can translate this action into an action for the boundary values of this function mu. And so this boundary action now, in this case, there are two separated boundaries, and on one hand side, we will call the boundary values of mu phi, and on the other side, it's psi, but then also this holonomy plays an important role. Okay, so again, so this is from Mach's paper with Wout Merbes and Ransbach. Sorry, I should... You know, after 2 years of Corona, I didn't use this thing for 2 years, and now obviously the battery is flat. Okay, sorry about this. Okay, so let's hope that it still works till the end of the talk. Good. So now then, this is derived in Mark's paper. So this is the action that you get for the boundary values of this function, which appears in the solution of the equation of motion for the U1 gauge field. And so it's not necessary to look at all the details, but the most important term is this one, because so there's a contribution from the holonomy. That looks like this. So K0 is the holonomy here. Okay, and now, so that's what we have. Again, so Mark was discussing charges here, and so this now also very much enters here. So we can actually look at the phase space, and then obtain the conjugate momentum for the holonomy, which is then actually related to a Wilson line in the radial direction from one end of the wormhole to the other. And then we can calculate the symplectic form on the boundary phase space, which is spanned by the fields at the two boundaries, their conjugate momenta, and the holonomy, and its conjugate. Okay. And then the symplectic form looks like this, and then you can actually check that it's non-exact, precisely due to this contribution of the holonomy. And so I think that that's now where the analogy to the quantum mechanics case becomes clear. Okay. So of course, but yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's exact in phase space.
But yeah. Yeah, because this is non-local. Okay. Yeah, you are. I mean, k is just a number, but it comes from this non-local term. Yeah. Okay. Yes, you're absolutely right. Okay. So. So now here we can see nicely what happens to the. Okay. So that's what I was trying to explain also for the quantum mechanics case, and I do think it's analogous. Okay, so here, because we have just a U1 term Simons, we have some loop group, okay, so Kac-Moody algebra, and in principle, now for the left and right boundary, we have such a structure here, but now due to the presence of this holonomy, and this Wilson line which stretches from one boundary to the other, in fact, the quotient is of the total group. Okay, and this just means that while this is factored, this is not. Okay, so this means we have a non-factorization of the Hilbert space so far. Okay, because so when the holonomy is non-zero, the two boundaries are coupled. And then we have this non-trivial Berry phase, in fact. Okay. Now, but I think as Mark already mentioned when he was discussing transimons in the lecture before, then now you can make a particular gauge choice, and that then sets this holonomy to zero. And if you do that, then the Hilbert space factorizes again in this way, and the gauge freedom of the boundary fields is fixed. At the same time, okay, and so Kostas, this is maybe an answer to what you were saying. I mean, of course, in the quantum mechanics example, it's much more simple, and of course, you are right. There's this interaction. Maybe we should go back to the quantum mechanics example if we can also formulate it somehow in this way. But there, obviously, we had this explicit interaction. But here, now, in some sense, by making a particular gauge choice, we can switch on and off this holonomy, which then leads to the factorization. Wait, okay, I was just meaning if you make a particular choice for this A5, no, for A5, okay, so where's the holonomy? I think what I was saying, if we make a particular gauge choice, we can cancel.
Yeah, but okay, so mu will not be periodic.
Sorry, what will not be periodic?
Mu, I mean, you can absorb K0,
yeah.
But then it's not periodic anymore. So you have to enlarge.
Okay.
Uh-huh. I'm not sure one can kill K0.
You're not sure that one can kill K0. Okay, I will have to think about this. Okay, thanks for. Okay, I was thinking that, you know. So you say the holonomy is always there now in this configuration. I cannot.
I think this integral is gauge invariant under the smooth gauge transformation.
Yeah. So you don't think there's any way we can somehow. Okay. Well, I mean, what happens if you shrink this to a point or?
Well, you can't, but then you would get a singularity if it's the holonomy is not zero.
Okay, good. Well, thanks. I will have to think about this. Okay, let me think about this. Okay, but. So let me go to the next step. And okay, so this was for the U1 case. And now the point is that similar analysis may also be performed for the SL2R times SL2R symmetry. And that brings us back to this Virasoro Berry phase. Okay, so it's important to note that we look at symmetry transformations that change states. So these are improper. And so different morphisms. And so the point is now that the symplectic form on the phase space can be mapped to the symplectic form on the Virasoro group manifold with a coupling between the two CFTs. And then exactly the same way, the symplectic form is non-exact, and from this factored structure, we arrive at this non-factored structure. And so the analysis is actually exactly the same as in the U1 case. It's a bit more involved in the algebra, but the formalism is very much the same. Okay, so let me try to talk you through this. There's the same analysis, which is again of this paper of Mark with Merbes and Ranschbar. And now we have another abelian version, but again, we look at these boundary values. We get an action for these psi and phi and psi fields at the boundaries. So now they can be reparametrized in a particular way. And then I think this was also briefly mentioned by Mark in his lecture. Actually the action at the boundary becomes the difference of the two geometric actions for the coadjoint orbit. But the important point is that on the left and right hand side, this element B0 must be the same. And then you can also show, the two theories become coupled by the fact that B0 has to take this value. And again, that couples the Berry phases for the two boundaries again. So this was also derived in this paper that Mark will talk about next week. There's also another paper by Christian Jansen and collaborators who also showed that, this B0 will actually be related to holonomy again, and the equation of motion then implies that this must be a constant. Okay, so, and this relation between the boundary actions obtained from the boundary values of the gravity fields and writing the action in terms of this geometric action is only possible if the orbit is the same for the two sides. So then again, this leads to this non-factored structure. Okay, so the asymptotic dynamics of the BTZ black hole is described by these coupled Virasoro Berry phases. And again, both sides are coupled by the holonomy, and they're also connected by a radial Wilson line, just as in this example that I showed before. Where was it? Why did I? Here. Okay, so by this Wilson line there. Okay. So the symmetry group is enhanced, but the boundary does no longer factorize. Okay. So again, here there's a very nice Hilbert space analysis if you want, coming back to your question, of course, this is a kind of semi-classical picture, but nevertheless, I think it characterizes some nice features. Yeah, exactly. Because, the point is that you have to select the same orbit for the two actions. Yeah, exactly. So that enhances the symmetry. Rather than having two copies, of this geometric action, they are coupled by the fact.
Yeah. Same S1 acts on both.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's the point. Yeah. Okay. So so this is a nice mathematical picture in ADS3, which gives you this non-factorization. Okay. So far I talked about the so-called Virasoro Berry phases. But now there's actually two other kinds of Berry phases that I quickly want to mention before coming to the end. And another type of Berry phase is the so-called gauge Berry phase. And now we will talk about proper diffeomorphisms before we talked about the improper state-changing diffeomorphisms. And so the proper diffeomorphisms correspond to gauge symmetries at the boundary, and they satisfy this equation, and they yield particular killing charges. So this was also explained by Mach, and okay, this is already relates to your very famous paper about this subject. And there's this very nice paper by Geoffrey Compère and collaborators where they look at this in this co-adjoint orbit formalism. But now the point is, again, if we apply this now to the case when we have two boundaries rather than one, then again, this non-exact form kicks in by the singular killing vector at the horizon. So in the presence of an eternal black hole, these killing charges may only be defined locally near the boundaries, but in the middle, the symplectic form will become non-exact. Just very trivially drawing, so this is a kind of cartoon of a wormhole. So essentially from these pictures where I have left and right, I just flip these two things and I can in principle glue together the left and the right space in such a way, and then my wormhole looks like a tube like this between the same parts, between two different parts of the same space. Okay, so now here I'm sitting in flat space, so in principle I can define the same time everywhere. But then the issue is, so if there's one observer entering the black hole on this side and another observer enters the black hole on that side, and then they can meet here, but then they will observe different times, okay? Because there's a singularity here, and so the killing vector jumps here at the surface, so by a component called delta, okay? So if there's a wormhole, there's a singularity in your killing vector, and this again will lead to a non-exact symplectic form. And now we can take an example for this diffeomorphism that Mach was discussing in the previous lecture. So if we take this to be our constant time slice, we can look at just a time, okay, instead of a general diffeomorphism, let's just look at a constant time slice, which is this blue line. Now remember that time goes in one direction on the one side and the other on the other. So if we evolve by the difference between the Hamiltonians of the two sides, then we get this picture. But that's actually a symmetry. So this is a proper diffeomorphism, if you want, at the boundary. So this symmetry does not transform the state. And so that will actually lead to a vanishing Berry phase. Whereas if we really evolve with this, then we actually, again, so we change the state in phase space, so we can again make a phase space argument there as well. And then, if we look at ER as EPR, then it's natural to look at the sum of field double state, and then we evolve the sum of field double with this operator here, and I will show you that this leads to a non-trivial Berry phase then. Okay, so that's just summarized here. Let me look at this case first, which is the second case here. So we get a vanishing Berry connection for a diffeomorphism, which is proper. And then we can actually explicitly calculate this by looking at the sum of field double states. And here this is done now for the case this Hamiltonian, which corresponds to that, so this is this change in phase space, and then just putting in the definition of the sum of your double state, we get a non-trivial Berry connection, and that will also lead to a non-zero Berry phase, which we can explicitly calculate. So then we see if we perform a proper diffeomorphism at the boundary, then the Berry phase vanishes, but in this case it would be non-zero. So before moving on, let me just make a small remark here. Now going back to the quantum mechanics model that I was discussing before, You might be familiar with this. There's a paper by Jafiris, who's actually going to give a seminar next week here also. So maybe I should advertise or make a connection to what he's going to talk about. Well, he has some very recent papers also about a more stringy approach to these things. But he has a very nice paper with Dan Harlow from some years ago, and they looked at JT gravity, which is in ADS2 again. They have a particular Hamiltonian, and so for the Hamiltonian of JT gravity, we also they had a wormhole analysis in this context, and then for that, using their analysis, we could actually also calculate the very phases for the JT gravity, and it also reflects again this similar structure. So there again is a calculation for a wormhole in phase space in ADS2. Where you see these phases appearing. Okay, so so precisely then there's a non-trivial winding around the black hole, which then gives you a factor of 2 pi actually. Okay, so just to make a connection to what you're going to hear next week. Okay, and to conclude, so this example, I mean, this I can also do in great detail, but I think I will probably slowly come to an end here. So there's also something called the modular Berry phase, and this is due to Bartek Cech. He has an entire series of papers. And again, he is looking at this just for one CFT, and we transferred it to two CFTs. And here the idea is to look at entanglement entropies. Okay, so this is a constant time slice in your ADS3 space, and so this is the Ryo Takayanagi geodesic, and this is the standard Ryo Takayanagi expression for the entanglement entropy. And the idea is to consider a so-called modular Hamiltonian, which is defined by this equation, and so that generates an abstract time evolution. Okay, so where time is in a kind of generalized parameter, the modular time parameter. And so then the choice of this modular time is a gauge symmetry for each of these intervals, and a parallel transport of the interval around a closed loop again leads to a Berry phase. Okay, so this is in this series of papers by Cech. And, yeah?
Why modular? Maybe I missed something. Why is this called modular?
Because he doesn't consider the time evolution along the physical time. So this is the modular Hamiltonian in the sense of this Bisognano-Riemann theorem in algebraic quantum field theory. So where, essentially, you define an abstract time parameter by this equation. Okay, this density matrix can be anything. you describe just an abstract Schrödinger equation with some abstract parameter tau that, in the sense of having a Hamiltonian is a Schrödinger equation. This is very common in algebraic quantum field theory. And for instance, if you do this for Rindler space, you can actually show that this is Hamiltonian is local, so which is one of the only few examples where this actually is local. And so there's a lot of interesting physics behind this as well. Okay. Now, there's in particular this paper where people already looked at the transition or the case of this so they looked at entanglement entropy in this case of this modular Hamiltonian, and so there's a transition in the entanglement entropy as a function of the temperature of the eternal black hole. So in one case, the entanglement entropy is just given by 2 geodesics at each side, which is again the factorized case, but then depending on the temperature, there's a transition where the geodesics are actually shorter if they go across the wormhole. And the entanglement entropy for the setup was analyzed in that paper, but we also now calculated the change in the Berry curvature that you get as a function of temperature in this geometry. Okay, so just to say that there's actually different possibilities of defining vary phases. I mean, so I gave you three examples now. There's this Virasoro vary phase, this gate vary phase, which amounts to the time evolution, and the third possibility is this modular vary phase. So these are all vary phases that you can study in ADS3. Okay. Okay. So probably I should wrap up and try to come back to the various questions that were asked. So what do I mean by wormhole Hilbert space? Well, okay, so we essentially looked at this phase space spanned by this just the elements of this analog classical mechanics model, essentially. And then the point is that we see this non-factorization from the appearance of a non-exact symplectic form, which then leads to a non-trivial vary phase. And this can be viewed as a sign of this non-factorization. Okay, so so this mathematical structure is also present in quantum mechanics and in CFT. So I had two parts of the talk. One was about these Hamiltonians in quantum mechanics, and the other one was about CFTs, where we made particular use of this co-adjoint orbit formalism for the Virasoro group. So as I said, we have three different vary phases, the Virasoro, the gauge, and the modular vary phase. Okay, so I also showed you this nice possibility for the quantum mechanics model that essentially this vary phase means that in the quantum mechanical system that states the same entanglement entropy can have different vary phases, which is a bit different from, so this Kostas mentioned this. So we have to have an interaction, otherwise, there's just everything is factorized all the time. But nevertheless, this symplectic form and vary phase occur in that scenario as well. So maybe it's actually possible to experimentally measure systems where states with the same entanglement entropy nevertheless have a different vary phase. I think that would be quite interesting. But on the more theoretical level, we see now this relation between entanglement and geometry made really precise at a mathematical level. So that's why this is a very, very beautiful tool. So I think, Mark, what you talked about in your previous lecture, this enters very heavily in this entire calculation. So essentially, it's looking at these for ADS3 CFT2. We look at the scenario where these asymptotic symmetries are considered in various configurations. And the key point is that since our wormhole has a non-trivial killing structure, so there's this jump of the time-like killing vector at the horizon, this immediately leads to this non-exact symplectic form, which then leads to the presence of the vary phases, which then in turn is related to the fact that we have this non-trivial anomaly. Okay, so and that was essentially my main message, so I think I would stop here then. Thank you.